From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Well, for those of you who think it's hard enough just to get through the day, try imagining New York City in the year 2030. Well, that's exactly what a new report released by Mayor Bloomberg does, and compared to a lot of places, the future looks bright. More people will want to come to New York City, compared with, say, upstate, where people are clamoring to leave. But if the projection of a million more people is true, on top of the 8 million already here, that'll mean challenges. How to accommodate more people needing homes, schools, clean air and water, and ways to get around. Here from the website Streets blog is a list of the a summary of the 10-point agenda in this report: creating housing for nearly a million more New Yorkers and working to make housing more affordable at the same time, aiming for every New Yorker to live within a 10-minute walk of a park, adding capacity to mass transit, backing up the city's water network, repairing the city's transportation infrastructure, upgrading the city's energy infrastructure, reducing the city's global warming emissions by more than 30%, achieving the cleanest air quality of any big city in America, cleaning up all the city's contaminated land, and opening 90% of the waterways in the city to recreation. Can the city do all of that while growing so fast at the same time? Let's ask three guests: Chris Jones, Vice President of Research at the Regional Plan Association, Michael Goodwin, Daily News columnist, and Jill Gardner, City Hall reporter for the New York Sun. Thanks to all of you for coming on today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jill Gardner, let me start with you. What exactly did the mayor propose yesterday, and where did he propose it?
Well, it's pretty much just what you said. The mayor was at the Queens Museum of Art yesterday, giving what he billed as a major policy speech, and he basically laid out this very ambitious agenda for really bringing the city's infrastructure up to date, and basically said that the city needs to prepare for a population explosion that is essentially going to add another city the size of Miami or Boston to what we have in New York.
Michael Goodwin, it's kind of funny that he did this out at the Queens Museum. I saw the photo in one of the papers showing the Unisphere and the old New York State Pavilion from the 1964-65 World's Fair. It's like he went to talk about future land to the site of the future of the past.
Right, it's sort of a Back to the Future approach, but I thought it was fitting given the scope of what he was talking about, and it is sort of a futuristic site, so why not?
Yeah, and Chris Jones from the Regional Plan Association, you know, maybe we should just, before digging into some of these specifics, take a step back and say, if the mayor is projecting a million more people, these are really historic times for the city, and maybe historic good times, because the city has been, what, 7 to 8 million for the whole last century.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think all of the challenges that the mayor laid out are absolutely true. We're looking at an extended period of growth for, you know, if you go back about 10 years from when this started and extend that out 25 years, it's a period that we haven't seen since before World War II. And this is the time when you have to start making some of the decisions as to how you're going to accommodate it. You know, no one knows exactly what the future is going to hold, but if you don't plan for growth, you're not going to see it.
So, Jill Gardner?
Yeah, I was actually just going to add to that. I think one of the most interesting things that he said was he really presented this as kind of a challenge for this generation. And in kind of, you know, taking on the responsibility himself, he said this administration is, you know, not beholden to special interests or big campaign contributions. So I think that there is maybe a fear that time is running out in his administration, and that he really wants to lock in
future mayors to getting these things done, which are not exactly kind of, you know, the sexy, glamorous things that are politically expedient.
And Michael Goodwin, one thing that strikes me from the list that I read is that for a city grappling with how to incorporate a million more people, it also talks a lot about how to make things better for everybody. So it's not just, oh my God, how are we going to, you know, deal with so many more people crowding in? It's things like aiming for every New Yorker to live within a 10-minute walk of a park, cleaning up all the city's contaminated land, opening 90% of the city's waterways to recreation, reducing the city's global warming emissions by more than 30%. So this is at one time, at once, how to accommodate more people, and at the same time, how to hit some kind of optimal state.
Right. Brian, you began by asking, could the city do all this? And the short answer is no, it cannot. I don't know about you, but I don't live within a 10-minute walk of a park right now. So unless either I'm going to move or a park is going to move, I already fall out of the net. But I think that the mayor clearly has a big goal, and that doesn't mean we shouldn't try for it. But I think that under the first thing that's going to happen when you try to do any of these things is there's going to be a squabble over resources, over who suffers, who sacrifices, and who gets the benefits. And I think on that score, the mayor has some real pluses in his record already, but he also has some minuses, and I think that the administration is going to need to do a little bit better in managing the growth that we're already seeing in the city.
In what ways, for example, Michael?
Well, I think that the Planning Commission in general, and I think has pretty much said yes to everything. The Brooklyn Yards being an example, the football stadium on the west side the mayor wanted to do. And if you read the community papers around the city, you see these fights all the time over this kind of infill housing where single-family homes are demolished to make room for a condominium with 10 homes or an apartment building with 50 homes. So you see more traffic on the street, you see the schools kind of bursting at the seams, and you just have the inconvenience and hassle of construction going nonstop. And then finally the buildings department, which has been so passive. You've had nearly 100 deaths in the last 5 years of construction workers, and the buildings department is just really missing in action on zoning violations, safety violations. So I think in those ways, the mayor has not managed the growth very well at this point. Now, I know we need to encourage it, but you also have to manage it.
Chris Jones, are you that down on the mayor's management of growth?
Actually, I'm not. I thought one of the things that was encouraging about this speech yesterday is that, they didn't just, say, here's the plan, we're moving ahead with it. I mean, that's a sure way of making sure that, the only thing you can accomplish is what's in your last 2 years of the administration. If you're going to have any type of sustained momentum behind some of these plans, you have to get public buy-in. And I would agree with Michael that that's, something that, I think the mayor has, improved on some and needs to improve some more as the administration moves forward. But I think this is, this is at least an encouraging start for it. I mean, we have to see, how the public engagement process plays out with it. Whether it's meaningful. But I think that this is the way to start. Managing the growth that we're already seeing. Get a broader public dialogue about it, and also to see that it's managing current growth. Also has to take into account of where you're going to be 5, 10, 20 years in the future.
This is WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's New York Futurama as we look at the report that Mayor Bloomberg released yesterday. That website Streets blog calls it Futurama 2030 as Bloomberg outlines ambitious 10-point agenda for New York 25 years from now. And we're talking about it with Chris Jones, Vice President of Research at the Regional Plan Association, a think tank that studies our region and makes policy recommendations. Michael Goodwin, the Daily News columnist, and Jill Gardner, City Hall reporter for the New York Sun. And we can open it to you. You want to imagine New York 2030 with us? You want to just close the doors and say we have enough people now? Or you want to talk about how to grow? Can we have a park, 10-minute walk from everybody's home, and yet have more homes at the same time? 212-433-WNYC, 833-9692. And for that matter, as a little sub-discussion, should Mayor Bloomberg run for president as an independent, which we will get to at least with Michael Goodman, who raises that in his column today in conjunction with this report. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Our inbox is always open. Email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Jill Gardner from The Sun, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say, following up on what Michael said about, you know, living close to a park, I think part of this is the mayor maybe realizing that the city needs to be livable also in order to expand the tax base and to keep businesses here and to keep, you know, residential communities here where people are going to be, you know, think that the quality of life is high. And all of that comes at a time when the city is also looking at its competitive nature compared to other international cities like London and Shanghai and Hong Kong.
By the way, Jill, did the mayor say why we will have a million more people? Is something changing in, you know, is it just the natural growth given the wave of immigrants that we've had in recent years and, you know, more births and more family members, or is it something else?
I think part of it is that. I know that that Robert Yarrow from the Regional Plan Association yesterday was basically talking about how this is really more than just New York. It's regional growth and it's national growth as well, and maybe not in, you know, the rural areas of upstate New York, but certainly the entire metropolitan area.
Not in the urban areas or the suburban areas of upstate New York either, for the most part, except maybe the Albany area. But Chris Jones from Regional Plan Association, you want to get in on that, the nature of the population growth?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Jill started to outline it correctly. I mean, you start with, you know, with a national population that's probably going to grow by some 50 million people over this period. The whole New York metropolitan area has, you know, is one of the, you know, 9 or 10, you know, growth areas in the country that are attracting people from overseas. The urban areas, you know, New York City and the outer boroughs in particular, but also, you know, places like Stamford, Connecticut, New Brunswick and New Jersey, White Plains, you know, like are becoming much more attractive as urban areas. I mean, we're all humbled when we make forecasts on these pieces. You know, whenever we think, you know, New York is, you know, is completely at the bottom and you know is going nowhere, it comes back. And whenever it's resurgent, there's you know there's some recession or event that
and you're right.
Us a little bit.
Yeah, and you're right. You certainly can't look at it just as the five boroughs.
Right.
I was in White Plains the other day and noticed that for all the brouhaha in the five boroughs about whether to have a Kmart, a Walmart. There was a new Walmart in White Plains, and
right.
Presumably there wasn't that much of a peep.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Goodwin, do you think it is inherently a good thing or a problem or a mixed blessing, this level of continued population growth?
I would say it's a mixed blessing, and I do recognize the benefits of it. First of all, I think that the unemployment rate in New York City at 4.1%, even if you assume it's not a hard and fast number, it clearly does represent a trend. There are more jobs in the city, and more city residents are getting jobs. I think that the crime issue is often overlooked, but I think that the revival of New York City, one of the things that caused it was that the city was safer. I mean, that people will put their money and their lives and their families' lives on the line only when they think there's a good chance they'll escape an awful crime. So I think that's an important thing. So there are a lot of factors that go into it, and I think if we take our finger off of the pressure points anywhere, this whole thing could slide badly. So, for example, just back to the issue of building, one of the things that the Daily News did about a year and a half ago was to go out to Staten Island, where there's been incredibly explosive growth. And some of the things were being built essentially right to the street, and a planner out there said, we're building tomorrow's slums today.
Mm.
And I think those kinds of things have to be watched, otherwise growth will be a negative, and we'll soon find ourselves staggering under the weight of bad housing, overcrowded schools, you know, an infrastructure that breaks down, that isn't reliable. And those are the kinds of nightmare scenarios. I think the mayor was wise to step in and say, we've got to take care of it now.
We have people from Ridgefield, Connecticut, to Harlem, to Glen Rock, New Jersey, who want to weigh in on New York area's projected growth, and we will take some phone calls in just a minute. And I also want to continue on the question of housing. The whole thing makes me think, well, with prices already sky high because of a mismatch of supply and demand, will a million more people mean skyrocketing real estate prices? But we'll continue with our three guests. We'll start to take your calls as we imagine New York in 2030, as Mayor Bloomberg did in a report released yesterday. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you're just joining us, Mayor Bloomberg released a report yesterday that imagines New York City in 2030 with a million more people on top of the 8 million already here, and a 10-point plan that the mayor released. Goals for New York, aiming to have every New Yorker live within a 10-minute walk of a park, adding capacity to mass transit, backing up the city's water network, repairing the transportation infrastructure, creating housing for nearly a million more New Yorkers, upgrading the energy infrastructure, reducing the city's global warming emissions by more than 30% at the same time as all of that, achieving the cleanest air quality of any big city in America. Can one of the densest cities accomplish that? Cleaning all the city's contaminated land and opening 90% of the city's waterways to recreation. So Mayor Bloomberg wants this to be probably the biggest. Maybe Southern California is really a bigger metro area, but as it grows to be the most livable metropolitan area in New York, big plans. And we're talking about them with Michael Goodwin, the Daily News columnist, Chris Jones, Vice President of Research at the Regional Plan Association, and Jill Gardner, City Hall reporter for the New York Sun, and James in Ridgefield, Connecticut. You're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Hi there. I had a comment and a quick question. My comment is that there's a film called, documentary film called The End of Suburbia, and it essentially talks about the suburban sprawl, that in fact the suburbs, because of rising energy costs, are going to diminish and that the city centers will grow. So it doesn't seem to come as a big surprise here that the population is going to increase. So my question to the panel, and coming from, you know, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada previously, where there's a lot of architects and planners discussing the new urbanism, which is very similar to what Michael Bloomberg is talking about, the integration with parkland. What is the reality of what Bloomberg has done so far? Is he integrating low-income housing with, you know, higher-income areas? Is that parkland land being integrated? Are these things a reality?
Big question and a few questions. Chris Jones from the Regional Plan Association. Sounds like that one is for you, especially with the suburban element.
Sure. I mean, I think it's true that as you're looking at higher energy costs, a shrinking amount of open space, you know, the highways jammed up, that you're still going to see growth in the suburbs, you know, but probably more along town centers, along transit lines, et cetera. But much more of it is going to, you know, is going to go in the city. I mean, I think the, you know, the mayor has made, you know, a strong effort at integrating, you know, low income and, you know, and higher income households with his, you know, with his, you know, ambitious housing agenda. I think there's certainly more that needs to be done on that score. And, you know, I think that needs to be an important part of this conversation that was, you know, that was started yesterday. This, you know, this process of looking at how the city should grow, there's a strong equity element to that. You know, like, it's who is it, you know, who is going to benefit from that growth, and how are we going to create neighborhoods that that make it livable for everyone?
Well, what about the contention that the suburbs will actually become less desirable and the city center more desirable? I mean, I imagine that's a function of some of the things we've been talking about already, relative crime rates, relative affordability of housing, schools, quality of schools.
Yeah, I don't want to overblow that. I mean, there certainly has been some, you know, convergence between city and suburbs over the last, you know, over the last, you know, 15 years or so. You know, lower crime rates in the city, you know, more congestion in the suburbs, you know, housing prices, which, you know, you can't differentiate anymore between some of these places. So there is, you know, kind of more of a balance. But there's still, you still want, for a healthy metropolitan economy, you want a choice of neighborhoods. There are always going to be people, you know, maybe after they've, you know, had their first kid or their second child, want to move out to a suburban community. So you want, you know, vibrant communities in all of these places. And I think that's, you know, that's where, I think the questioner's original premise of this, not, you know, it's how you actually design and build these communities, which is important.
Michael in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Yes, good morning. 30 years from now, Harlem is going to be 400 years old, and it's hard to foresee that there'll be any teachers or firefighters or policemen who will be able to live here if trends continue as they are. The mayor's talk about affordable housing seems pretty disingenuous when you look at the fact that both in Brooklyn and in Manhattan, with Stuyvesant Town and Peter Cooper Village, we've just eliminated two enormous complexes of affordable housing and no intervention on the part of the mayor whatsoever. How will that be made up for and surpassed in the future? And then I'd also like to comment that, as Paul Goldberger stated in the Times recently in his editorial, there won't be any landmarking here either. So in terms of issues of quality of life and affordability, I just don't think that the mayor is being very genuine here.
Michael, thank you. And Michael Goodwin, do you want to react to that?
Well, I think the caller is on to something, and I think it's really kind of fundamental to who Michael Bloomberg is. He has often said, for example, that New York City, it's about the level of services, not the level of taxation and affordability. And I think that, now, in fairness to him, that's happening all across the country. There's an incredible upscaling going on of American life. I mean, you don't just go and buy coffee now. You have your choices of 27 coffees. So I think that this incredible upscaling of American life is affecting the choices in New York, and so it is getting harder and harder to live here. The tax base, I mean, the taxes have gone up dramatically on single-family homes, on the city's income tax has gone up, the sales tax. So at some point, it is difficult without huge government subsidies for a lot of even civil servants to make it here. That is one of the equity issues that I think the mayor has taken a side on, and his side has been largely on, you know, an upscaling of life in the city.
So
certainly in Manhattan, and you did see that he didn't step in with the Stuytown Peter Cooper Village sale. But it's not clear that all of those apartments are also going to be, you know, put up at market rate. A lot of them will probably stay in the affordable range for a long time just because state law dictates that they have to.
That's only for the current tenants. I think that the experience already with that complex shows that as soon as those tenants move out, state law allows them to go to market rents under certain conditions, and every single one of them has. But let's stay on housing, Jill. And, you know, prices are already sky high because of a mismatch of supply and demand and maybe some other factors. People say rent stabilization contributes to the market price and other things. But on the basic supply and demand equation, did the mayor say anything about whether a million more people will mean more skyrocketing real estate prices?
Well, yeah, he talked a little bit about growth basically bidding up housing prices and, you know, discussed the fact that about a third of New York renters already pay more than half of their income in rent. He already has this large affordable housing plan, as you know, and talked about adding more to that. And I'm sure that there'll be, you know, people that view that as really welcomed news and also, you know, people that will be upset about that. You already saw in today's newspapers an editorial saying that the mayor shouldn't be, you know, adding more government-subsidized housing.
We're talking about the report on New York in 2030, released by Mayor Bloomberg yesterday, with Jill Gardner, who is just speaking, City Hall reporter for the New York Sun, Chris Jones, Vice President of Research at the Regional Plan Association, and Michael Goodwin, the Daily News columnist, and Dave in Glen Rock. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Brian. The science fiction writer William Gibson had this excellent vision of the East Coast in the future, where that he called the Boston to Atlanta Metropolitan Access. That basically that whole area would eventually become one giant city. And as sort of on a realistic level, what I wonder is, have there been any discussions between the mayor's office and other cities, either large like Philadelphia or smaller like Stamford or Newark, to create more port authority type bodies where services are shared and perhaps expenses are shared as New York City population grows and perhaps the entire expansion of the Northeast
Well, Chris Jones from the Regional Plan Association, talk about a regional plan, Atlanta to Boston.
Well, he's actually right on target to a certain extent. You know, we're starting to see that we can't just look at our traditional suburban boundaries anymore. There is almost an unbroken string of urbanized land from Boston to Washington, at least, you know, not I don't know about to Atlanta, but that region in the Northeast has to start talking to each other, start to coordinate strategies in a more proactive way. I mean, just one example is the what's happening with Amtrak up on the Northeast corridor. It's a vital service to the economies of these cities. It could be, a boon to some of the smaller cities in between, and yet it's something that requires cooperation among the states as well as with the federal government.
But Michael Goodwin, how much did you cringe when you heard him propose more non-municipal, non-state government bureaucracies like more port authorities?
That's right. I think that the kind of political jurisdictions are a real issue here. I mean, one of the things I was thinking, Brian, is that, the commuter tax, when it died an unceremonious death about 8 years ago now, where essentially commuters to New York City don't pay any tax in New York City. And I think that, and yet they clearly do use many services. I mean, if they call a policeman or they put their trash out somewhere, all those things. So we don't get the benefit, the direct financial benefit, to the bottom line of the city's budget. So I think those are all very difficult issues to work out. Political jurisdictions within New York State are impossible. Imagine what they would be trying to involve New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, and Washington, D.C. So it's a lot of complicated issues are raised by that.
Which brings us to transportation, Jill, and I understand that a mini debate broke out at the scene of the mayor's presentation in Flushing Meadows Corona Park over the idea of the so-called congestion pricing.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to bring that up. It's certainly smaller scale than the Boston to Atlanta idea, but I think there's going to be real pressure on the administration to start thinking about congestion pricing. I know that they probably have been thinking about it behind the scenes, but the mayor has pretty much ruled it out at this point. Or he ruled it out, as early as last week, saying that he didn't think it was politically feasible. But you're going to have a lot of people from the outside pushing for congestion pricing now. And I think that, as part of this plan, he said pretty much everything is on the table and we're willing to hear everyone's ideas. And I think that that one is going to come forward pretty strongly.
Ray and who wanted to jump in?
Me and Michael. Brian, just on that congestion pricing issue, and I that's one of those that is a difficult political one, but I think that there are midterm issues that can be dealt with, and again, it's management. And if you go through any Midtown street, sort of almost any time of the day, you'll see cars blocking the box, you'll see double parking. I mean, limousines on Central Park South take up half the street. So it's the failure to enforce the rules we already have add to a lot of our problems. And I think that that's where Bloomberg has not been a good manager. He has not ridden herd on the agencies. He doesn't sit there with them, every day and say, what are you doing about traffic? What are you doing about highway construction jobs that seem to take forever? And I'm sure a lot of listeners can have experiences of going by a highway job where a lane is blocked for a year and they never see anybody working. So I think those are the kinds of things that the mayor has to get better at if this growth is going to be anything other than a nightmare for those of us who are already here.
We just have a few minutes left. And, I was struck by the discussion of equity issues, that if Mayor Bloomberg is planning New York and embracing New York as an upscale place, and there are going to be 9 million people in the city alone, then Chris Jones from the Regional Plan Association, I don't get where all the lower income folks are going to live.
It's obviously the toughest question you have to face, but I'll just say this. It's easier to create affordable housing if you have growth and if you have revenue coming into the city from real estate development, et cetera. The challenge is to take a portion of that revenue that's coming in,
from market rate housing, from commercial development, and apply that
right.
to affordable housing.
But all
the city has started at
right, but affordable housing can't be all government generated, and because there's just not enough to go around that way.
Certainly
and,
not local government.
Right, and eventually people will start to leave, won't they? And I don't know, maybe there would be a natural supply and demand shift, you know, out to Syracuse and Rochester or something. I don't know.
Well, there needs to be a public component in it. It just because of the you know, because of the economics of the housing marketplace and the place where you have, you know, very costly land and construction expenses. If the government, and it has to be very targeted subsidies. It has to be. Things like inclusionary zoning, which is, you know, if you, you know, we'll let you build this many market rate housing as long as you build, you know, this many affordable housing. So it's having the public sector channel the value that's kind of, that's being created in the private sector.
Michael Goodwin, 20 seconds, really 20 seconds. Did you mean to suggest in your column that this report has something to do with Bloomberg running for president?
Absolutely. I think the mayor in many ways has grown a little bit bored and feels he's outgrown the city hall job, and he's got the bug. He's got the presidential bug. And look, on things like this, these are clearly national issues. We're talking about national growth and urban areas around
and
the
country. And envisioning
so,
New York as the best city in America is something that he would hope to run on.
I look, it's not a great presidential campaign, but it's something.
Chris Jones from the RPA, Michael Goodwin from the Daily News, Jill Gardner from the New York Sun. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
For envisioning New York in 2030.
In the year 3535, ain't gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. In the year
coming up next, we'll meet one of those new members of Congress, a real Kentucky liberal. Stay with us.
You won't find a thing to choose. Nobody's gonna look at you.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org, and thanks.